In Session with Dr. Farid Holakwi.
Good evening. Welcome to In Session. I'm your host, Dr. Farid Holakwi, and I'll be with you for the next hour here on Radio Hamra. You can follow me on Twitter or Instagram or like my page on Facebook to get updates on the show or suggest topics or books for the program. And the shows are uploaded at the end of each week to my SoundCloud page and podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Let's get to the books of the week. The book of the week for this week that I'll talk about on next Monday's show is Little Treatments, Big Effects by Jessica Schleider. Little Treatments, Big Effects, How to Build Meaningful Moments That Can Transform Your Mental Health. And so from what I saw written or described about the book is it's about shorter term types of therapy approaches, interventions, and how they can be beneficial. If you've listened to me before, you know that I'm wary of quick fixes in general. So I don't know enough about the book to say if it has that slant to it that it might be simplifying things. But from what I did see, it seems like it's based on research, or there's research that's looked at the interventions that are discussed in the book. So had some skepticism, but I did want to read it for myself as a therapist and then share it with you. So looking forward to reading that and discussing it next week. Little Treatments, Big Effects, Jessica Schleider. The book of the week from last week that I'll be talking about also had skepticism, maybe in some different ways. There's a complicated one. It's Niccolò Machiavelli's The Prince. The Prince by Niccolò Machiavelli. This is one of those works that is, it's so known, even though it maybe isn't read as much as it's known, like most books are. Of course, I was included in that camp that I hadn't read the book, but I'd heard it so much in books, especially this was written in the early 1500s. So they get, if they last that long, but even if they last a short while, they have a reputation that is usually built on, of course, some people who have read it or many people maybe who've read it, but it becomes its own thing, just like our reputations in general. It's not necessarily who we are, but how people might see us. When we have works like this, they become their own living thing and evolve in ways that might not necessarily be like what the original actually says. And so it was a reminder for me, of course, we can't read every single thing out there, that's not possible, but of how we should be wary of what we think we know about a person, a writer, a piece of work that we have not read ourselves, because it creates its own reputation or builds its own reputation that may be very different from what it actually is. And I might talk more about that, you know, with a book like this. The content, of course, is important. There's a reason why it became or has still remained so significant as a work related to political theory and just one of the more famous titles that we have, and even psychological traits have been attributed to him, which I'll also get into. But I did want to mention this point, something you have to be wary of. It's very reminiscent and similar to how religion functions or dysfunctions in certain ways, where many people who are very religious have never read the religious texts of their own religion, but it's more a feeling and tradition and things that have been passed down unto them that they've internalized, not necessarily the words of their own holy books. So we see this very often. And so, or even politically, we see this too, or, you know, so many politicians say, I love the Constitution of the United States here in the U.S. So you hear that a lot, or I carry a Constitution in my pocket, but they haven't necessarily read the Constitution to know what it's saying, or even go deeper into understanding it, analyzing it, reflecting on what's there. It's just this way of saying, I'm so patriotic, I'm so American, I'm more American than you, or I'm more American than my political opponents or enemies, which itself might be a very relevant to the book and what might be said in the book of how to gain power and maintain power. But so for me, that was itself something and a reminder to myself that be wary of this, cautious that you think you know something that you haven't yourself evaluated. As I mentioned a lot, no one can do the thinking for you. And so if you just rely on what others say about a book or a movie or song or whatever it might be, you're at the mercy of other people's opinions and you're not making your own decision. But then often we, or your own judgment, we often function on that judgment as if we know. And so for me, that was quite interesting, reflecting on that in this book. It's not a very long book. There's introductions of things in the edition I had, but his part or the part written as the prince itself is 85 pages or so. And it's a letter at the beginning of it. It starts with a letter from Machiavelli to the magnificent Lorenzo de' Medici, who recently had come to power. So in a way, we could see these are directives or advice to this young prince about how best to rule, what to do, what not to do, based on Machiavelli, who was serving in politics in the political realm. Based on his experience, he's sharing, this is what I've learned. What's also interesting, hearing some people's remarks about how to read it in the sense of how it can be read. What was the intention behind the prince? The most straightforward one would be that this is Machiavelli sharing his insights to the young prince and to future princes, politicians, on how they can do whatever it takes to get power, maintain power, and you know, be brutal, be whatever it has to be two-sided, manipulative, but to maintain power. So that's the most straightforward, and it could be that. Some others will argue that it could be satirical in a way, or it's a way of revealing the secrets, pulling the curtain and revealing that this is what is being done behind the scenes. So it's being exposed. And in that way, actually warning people that, you know, this is how a ruler might try to come to power and to maintain power, and you can be aware of that. So it's not clear. And so what's interesting to me is, again, Machiavelli, when I even hear that name, it's such a negative thing because of what it's become associated with, as being someone who's manipulative and cares just about power. And so he could have been that kind of person and really wanted people to be that and become that way. And even if we look at, as I was saying, psychologically, there's a trait, a personality trait called Machiavellianism, which is actually someone who is characterized, the trait is characterized by interpersonal manipulation, indifference to morality. So they're manipulating. Morality doesn't matter. Just a means justifies the end. It doesn't matter what you do. Lack of empathy and a strategic focus on self-interest. So very selfish, self-centered, seeing people as just tools for your own power, for your own benefit. And it is part of the dark triad of personality traits, which includes Machiavellianism along with narcissism and psychopathy, which is a very bad thing. If we see that in someone, and often we see it in leaders, they become horrible people. Whatever their capacity is, they're going to be using people, harming people, only thinking of themselves and not worrying about manipulating. The traits overlap a lot too. They're not completely distinct, but they definitely overlap. And when they come together, it's a really horrible thing. So when you just hear Machiavelli, and Machiavellianism, it's a horrible thing. But as I said, when I read the book, giving that perspective of seeing the words themselves, definitely it is very cold in the sense that it's just giving what he sees as facts, but not just facts. There's facts of history, although even that always history is up to interpretation at some level. But he's just sharing what he's observed. And he even says, and his method is not to be, definitely not humanistic. It's definitely not a focus on morality or how we would hope a ruler can be and should be, or even an idealized notion that, you know, someone who is just kind and good to everyone can also be a powerful ruler who rules for a long time. It's in that way dispassionate, disinterested. It's just saying this is how it is. If you're too nice, it actually backfires. If you're just kind to everyone, generous to everyone. And that might be true. So even if it was just a focus on not abstract political theory or imagining what things can be like, but really what things are like based on what he's seen, and then because of that, what you should do. How do you win power? Should you join forces with other people? Should you have, what type of army should you have? And he's saying when you have mercenary armies, that's not going to work out for you, because they actually, they could be good during peace, but during war, they're actually not going to really fight for you because there's not that loyalty. So if you have a citizen army, it's always better. So there are these detailed types of advice that are written throughout. And again, everything is not about what's good or what's bad as far as morality goes. That's completely out the window. It's just about what you can you do, should you do to have power, maintain your power. And we can even, in a way, justify that as having its own morality. I'm not suggesting that. I don't think that's true. But some might think that. Even we look at, that's what religions do, but also governments do. We are good. We are the chosen people, the better people, or we are the our nation is the good nation, and these other people are the enemy. So even if we do something, that the reasoning would go manipulative, even killing, even whatever it might be, the ends justify the means. So it doesn't matter. We still should do those things because we have to stay in power. So I think most people would not anymore want to say they are Machiavellian or want to be that way. But even that would be itself Machiavellian, because they know how it's going to show up. That if you say you're just trying to, you know, maintain your power and are okay to manipulate or harm others, you know that you won't keep your power that long. So in a strange way, probably, and I know I can't speak for a historical figure, but based on what I read in the book, Machiavelli himself would probably say, don't say you're being this way. Don't say you're Machiavellian. Don't say you're following my advice, because that itself would backfire, because he does talk about appearing virtuous, but not necessarily being virtuous. So you want people to think you're generous and good to a degree, but don't actually have to always be that way. The appearance of it is more important than actually being so, which again comes off very manipulative and immoral. But as I might touch on later on the show, continuing on this book, that's what I see a lot of pop psychology doing. And so maybe in some ways, Machiavelli was the first pop psychologist and self-help guru, in that often what I see people advising people to do, when you see these people online or in their books, it's often things you can do to appear like, for example, you care, or to appear like you're listening. So say these kinds of words and people tend to think you care more, or say things like this and people think you're competent. Use this word instead of that word. And I always have a very averse reaction to these types of this type of advice or this school of thought. It's basically saying, rather than genuinely caring about people, here are ways to appear like you care about people. Rather than listening to your partner, here are some ways to make it seem like you're listening to your partner. And I'm giving a caricature. Obviously, there's a lot of things out there that aren't this way, but we see a lot of these types of advice or books written or reels on social media that might suggest this is a quick fix. Again, going back to not liking quick fixes, that is a concern. So when I read the book, I noticed, and I'm actually going to do something that I just said you shouldn't do, but just even the title, Winning Friends and Influencing People, that type of mindset, how to make people like you, which we see a lot in books that are popular in self-help types of realms, this is often very much, it can come off manipulative. It might seem like in a good way, but to me, there's a manipulative element to it. So that was something I thought was interesting, reading the book, and with that lens also at times thinking about it. It seemed to me this is a lot of what we do see and people think of as good advice, or that's good for someone to do that. But with Machiavelli, of course, it's seen in a certain way, and maybe rightfully so, but I think we're missing that it's still happening in front of us. As always, we want to learn from history, but we're usually not such great students. Let's go to a commercial break. After we go to the commercials, I want to talk more about some thoughts and about some more of the content. The Prince by Niccolo Machiavelli. We'll be right back. Welcome back. So, continuing the discussion on the book The Prince by Niccolo Machiavelli. And as I mentioned, I'm glad I read it, and it's a reminder for me to go back and read classics. You know, there's always this difficulty of so many books to read and so little time, so we have to choose. We can't read them all, but every so often I do think it's good to go back and read some books that are classics and have influenced history significantly, and read the original for ourselves, because again, it impacts history and it can impact how we see things, but we don't have the full picture. We definitely don't have our own picture until we've read it ourselves. So getting a bit to some of the content, again, it's this very just direct. This is the best way to do things. For example, don't take people's property or their women. Back then men only had property. Don't take their property or their women, not because that's not a good thing to do, that's immoral, but because people don't like it. They're going to go and be against you. So again, it's not about morality. That is not something he discusses or uses in the decision-making of what you should and shouldn't do. It's about what will gain power, help you maintain power, what will make you lose power. And so he says, related to that, he says that people will more quickly forget the loss of their fathers than of their own property. So don't take their land, even though obviously you can. When you're a prince, there's these things you can do. Don't do that, because it's going to backfire. Again, not because it's bad, but it's going to backfire and hurt you in the end. Even there's, you know, sometimes he'll talk about violence and how you have to be violent or aggressive at times, and it's better to do it all at once or in a short period of time, because then people are more likely to forget it or to move on from it than to stretch it out over time. Again, don't be violent. It's bad to hurt or kill, or do it all at once, because that's better in some way morally. No, it's just better for you as the ruler. So again, we could see how it's associated with this this negative psychological trait, because if you act in this way, you are acting in a very immoral way, something that we, from a moral standpoint, no one would say is a good thing or would recommend. But if you are in politics and power, and that's the game you're playing, he's saying this is how you should play it. If you play it this way, you can win. If you don't, you will lose. There's also a very popular, famous theme of should you be feared or loved? And this reminded me of, if you're a fan of The Office, where Michael Scott, one time he says, you know, it was mockumentary style, so he's speaking to the camera, would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me, which is a hilarious line. And actually, looking at the prince, probably we'd see that Michael Scott, because he wanted to be loved so much, it made him not a great ruler. He was not able to have so much power because that backfires when you want to be loved. And actually, that's what Machiavelli says. Of course, everyone would want both, to be feared and loved. But he says, essentially, when it comes down to it, we have to err more on the side of being feared if you want to be a leader that maintains power for a long period of time. And so you have to be ready to you give up being loved or not focus on that if you want to keep your power. So that's another interesting one, and a big one that was there. Even, you know, he talks, it's political theory and political philosophy, and even there's philosophy about free will, talking about fortune, which he says is a woman, and has some interesting things to say why it actually favors those who are bold because of being a woman. But and he says that, of course, fortune, or it is something that does impact us, but to say that it's all luck, for example, that makes people have a big let's say, fortune or success, I should say more success. That's not the case. It's not just about luck. And then he gives this example of sometimes, you know, we could think of fortune like a big storm. And yes, sometimes it's so powerful and it just has its own destiny, or it's going to just affect things the way it's going to affect things. But he says, well, actually, there's things we could do, building reinforcements and dikes and things that might impact or affect how that storm does damage or hurt one. And so similarly, yes, we have fortune. There's things that are out of your hands, out of your control, but there are things that you can control. And he says even there is free will, so there's something that we can do. And then even in this same chapter or section, he talks about how there's this kind of interplay where what one does or what their characteristics are like, it depends on if it matches what's needed at that time. So he does give a lot of advice throughout the book, which is very directive, but here also there's this way of adding that does depend on the certain circumstances. You have to pay attention to that. You can't just always do the same thing. And even shares how, yeah, some people, a ruler might do one thing and it works, but then times change. They try to do that same thing that worked before, not realizing now it requires something different. And actually turns out that, now it's not going to work. They're not changing with the times. And he also even adds that sometimes, you know, two people can do the same thing and get a different result. And that does happen also. There is some fortune. But, you know, that is good advice. I mean, pretty standard at this point. I don't know how standard it was back then. But that you have to be ready to change with the times a bit too. If you're not responding to the people and the needs and the things that are going on around you, doing the same thing that worked for you won't necessarily keep working for you. You have to be ready to adjust and make changes as well. So I thought that was fairly, in a way, straightforward, but does make sense in a book that's very directive about what you should do and shouldn't do. It was giving this sense that you also have to be ready to change and adapt to what is happening. And again, there's lots of times where his advice is very straightforward that it has to be this way. So I think there's things that he did see as there's only one way to do it, or there's this right way to do it. But he was adding that it could be, there could be different ways of looking at things. So that was, also interesting, a kind of a philosophical point there about free will. But as I was reading the book, I had these, first of all, as I said, it was good to read the original because I had so many assumptions about it that were true only to some extent and some was not true at all. But you just got the sense of someone just giving advice in a very disinterested, robotic way. And as I was saying before, that's something that I see a lot happening in the world where we get so focused on results that we lose sight of what we're doing, how we're doing it. The means should not just justify the ends, or other way around. The ends should not just justify the means. You think you're doing something good, so you can do anything you want to do that good thing. It's much more complicated than that, and so we have to be aware of that. And so this also, to me, is something I've thought about when we look at what parents are doing with their kids or even ourselves, and I think it's an American ideal. Maybe it's the whole world, but I'm here, so I see it more. This notion that you should get what you want. If you want something, you should get it. Why not? And I think there is, of course, wanting things makes sense and striving for them makes sense. But this idea that I should have it, or even I deserve to have what I want, I think we're seeing that more. And that's even part of this narcissism. So yeah, this quality of Machiavellianism, was Machiavelli himself like this? It's hard to say. He's sharing his thoughts on things. Doesn't mean he thinks it's the right thing to do or he would do it himself. Maybe he would. But there is some of this I see much more. We talk about narcissism on the rise, but related to that, the sense that I should have what I want, and so it doesn't matter what I do to get what I want. We see this in general when it comes to making money, where people say, "Oh, someone's doing this, and they're and they make this much money," and people say, "Yeah, can you believe they're doing that?" But then the response is always like, "Well, they're making that much money, so how can you say it's wrong?" So we clearly see that the ends justify the means in the financial sense. If you're making money, it can't be wrong. And I think that's horrible to think that way, but we do see that becoming part of our accepted culture and accepted conventional wisdom and conventional thinking, is that if it makes you money, there's nothing that someone can say bad about it. Even if it's illegal, as long as you don't get caught, often that's the case. But especially if it's legal, then why wouldn't you do whatever it is that's immoral or wrong or has some violation of someone else's rights even? Doesn't matter, you're making money. So I think that's really unfortunate. But this notion that you should have what you want, I think is very dangerous. And it's a very big thing in going back to pop psychology, which I'm hating on a lot, but this notion of, you know, everyone should have what they want. You're so amazing. You know, you're exceptional. You stand out. Why shouldn't you have it all? Like, there's just ways that it's obviously a message anyone wants to hear, that they deserve everything they want. And also often, and I can help you get that if you listen to me or do my seminar or do this or that, but this notion that you'd have everything that you want. And of course, on the surface, that's always going to sound good. But I really think we should think twice about that. Should it be that way? Why should you always have what you want? You're just one person in the world. Yes, you should get things you want, have things you want, strive for things you want, but should you have everything you want? Absolutely not. And that's not how the world is going to work. And taking it to the extreme and not trying to make them a huge leap, but even when I see some acts of violence that we see happening, even often with people who become shooters, school shootings or just shootings that we see, very often you see that the person is frustrated with the world in a way that's stating, I didn't like what I was getting. I should have gotten better than this. This was unfair. And I can get that it's frustrating when things don't go your way and you can be down about it. But that added part of, and I should have what I want. And if I don't, that means I can do whatever I want to get it. So we can see again, that's where the Machiavellianism as a trait, when we talk about manipulation or willing to do anything it takes to get what we want, is such a horrible thing. There's this notion that if I'm not getting what I want, why shouldn't I be able to inflict harm on anyone, even they're not related to me not getting what I want? Sometimes they become a representation of that. Okay, there's no women in my life, so I'm going to go attack any woman because they're part of the problem and my problem. But I think this is a really harmful thing. So it's something to think about personally, that we should strive for what we want. It's good to think about what you want. Go for it. That is good. But this notion that I should have everything that I want, or if something doesn't go the way I want it to, that's not right, or it always should work out for me, doesn't make sense and isn't right and isn't realistic and isn't healthy at all. And this is something that we, you know, when you watch people sometimes giving this type of advice or these kinds of motivational types of videos and things online, and I don't think of a zero sum, by the way. You know, it's not that, well, everyone has to lose because someone has to win and someone has to lose. There are some things that are like that. But there is sometimes this notion that they're talking to everyone and they are all right. But sometimes people are mad at each other. So how can they both be right or perfectly right or exactly right? You know, you can't tell one of them you're definitely right and then talk to the next person and say you're definitely right. Then you're being dishonest. It's not genuine. It's just to make people feel good. But I think this is something that floats around in the air, this mindset that, yeah, you're totally right. You are the victim and you are the good one and the other person is the bad one. This is something that we saw in, I think it was in Alfred Adler's, in the Courage to be Happy. This is a common theme that, yeah, I'm bad, poor me, and the other person is so bad. Let me tell you about how bad they are, is something that we see a lot of. And there's sometimes a truth to it, but it can be a very dangerous place to fall into, the trap of seeing everything through that lens. So, you know, coming back to the book, I'm very happy I read it because I'd heard so much about it. As a psychologist, we talk about Machiavellianism as a psychology trait. You know, seeing the origins from this book was important for me to see what he's talking about, learning from it. I'm sure many politicians, again, they would, to be Machiavellian would be to not actually outwardly say you are a follower of his or take some of his things to heart. But I think you see it in politics to this day, where it's not about being a good person, it's about winning. That's the only thing. When we look at American politics, I'm sure politics around the world even more, I'm more familiar with American politics, no one cares about doing the right thing. And this is where the polarization becomes even more of an issue. We so much feel that we're right and the other side is immoral and unjust and it's going to ruin the country and hurt people, and even they intend to hurt people, that stopping them doesn't matter. So even if you're breaking rules, even if you're lying, even if you're cheating, stealing, doing things that are not okay, very clearly morally, it's for a bigger cause. So you have to be okay with that. That's the only way to make that happen. I think that is very harmful. So I think what Machiavelli says in this book, again, was it advice that he thought was really, really good? Was it satirical in the sense that he was poking fun at how things are? Was it a warning? This is what people do, the people of, you know, the nations, the general public, be aware of this. Whatever it was, there's definitely lessons to be learned, because the same things are definitely happening today, maybe in different ways, because the times have changed to a degree, but the themes are still there. So highly recommend it. Obviously, it's a quick read. As I said, even last week when I described the book, when I post a book, there's always this notion that I'm endorsing the book and what it's saying, or I'm endorsing the author, and even makes me hesitate sometimes of what books I choose at some level, because I understand that there is this way of calling something the book, your book of the week, sounds like an endorsement. For me, I'm always trying to learn more and hopefully share a book that's interesting for the audience. But I'm just aware of this, and with this book, I knew there was some sense of that. As I'm speaking, I realize I didn't post it, so I have to make sure I post it after the show. So we'll see what the reaction is online about this being the book of the week, or when I was reading it in coffee shops this week, a few times I was doing that, I wondered what people might think, because it almost is funny in a way. People might look and think that means you're trying to learn from it. So anyway, the book again is The Prince by Niccolo Machiavelli. Let's go to our last commercial break. Back. So the first two segments, I was discussing the book The Prince by Niccolo Machiavelli. As I was mentioning, you know, it's interesting how things take on a life of their own and have a reputation, but we often don't know what the original is about. And as I was also sharing, I think we see this a lot in pop psychology, and it's just a reality of life. One of those painful truths in the book, in a way, is trying to give these potentially painful truths, or what might come off as immoral truths, in the sense that these are the things that work and these are things that don't work. And it's not necessarily always the nicest things that work. There could be a tension and dichotomy between being nice and being effective. And, you know, there's some truth to that. I don't think it has to be black and white, but I definitely think there's truth to that. And in general, the way I'm saying this is a truth is that we think of good characteristics, having good character. But if we're being real with ourselves, most of us are striving towards looking like we have good character rather than genuinely aspiring for those characteristics. I definitely see this in myself too. Maybe I'm Machiavellian, but I think it's very true of all of us that we can be so impacted by how others see us. More than really about what it is that is good. And I think it is important for us to go towards that which is actually good rather than appearing good, knowing that it's always going to be there, that this caring about what people think, it's very easy to say you don't care about what people think. I think it's also funny when people talk so much about how they don't care what people think, because clearly you care about what people think because you want them to think that you don't care about what people think, or else you wouldn't have to say it so much. It wouldn't be something that you would share unless it was specifically asked or was relevant in some way. But if you are stating it, that means very clearly you care what people think. And so people often want to appear honest, whether or not they are necessarily honest, truthful people. That's a different question. Or if we look at religion, we see this so strongly, and even it could be laughable because we, of course, if you look at most of the major world religions, they generally believe in a all-knowing God, that God sees all your actions. Not only that, God knows your intentions and what's going on in your head and in your heart and is very aware of all of those things. And so sees all of that, also sees your actions. But people who are and claim to be and really genuinely might be very religious can be so concerned with if other people in their community think they are following the laws or not. And now, of course, there is something that our reputation has genuine impact in our life, a very real impact in our life. That's true. So I'm not saying it doesn't matter at all. But when you see this, what makes it laughable is if you aren't following the law, but then you're so focused on making sure people see it. But if you believe in this God that is all-knowing and sees what you're doing, then you should be very much more consumed that God knows what you did and didn't do rather than what people know. But we can see that we're so focused on that, what people see. So this is something that we all have to, I think, reflect on and look at ourselves, this preoccupation we can have with what others think or how others see us rather than who we actually are. Even if we look at in the Persian culture, we see so much of this is about how do people see me? Do people see me as a kind person? And Taaruf is kind of a clear example of this. How much am I coming off as someone who's so generous that I would give and give and give to the point of pain or don't even think about it, and I would never ask. So if you offer me something, I'll never say yes to it. And so it becomes this type of battle to show how good you are, but really the focus is more about making sure it looks good rather than being good. And I wouldn't say it's a one-to-one correlation, but I've seen many people who are so Taarufi, and so, you know, to someone who's not Persian, Taaruf is this exaggerated politeness, so overly polite. So it can be both in what you give, that you are very giving and don't even think twice, and that you don't want to receive and you don't ask for anything and don't even receive and won't let anyone even do something for you. But I've seen many people who are so good at playing the game of Taaruf, or so good at it to extreme levels, I won't even walk in a room before you, or I would never do this, or I can't even do that type of a thing. But then when it came down to doing certain actions, we're okay doing these horrible things or very immoral things that show a total lack of politeness and respect and care. So we could see that it's more about looking like you are a caring, good person than actually being that. And so I think this is a big challenge for all of us. We might talk about Machiavellianism in this extreme of these people who are very manipulative and hurting others and self-interested. But at some level, maybe this sounds very pessimistic of human nature, we all have that. It is part of all of our experiences to have this element of Machiavellianism in that way, that we're self-interested, that we can be manipulative, that we can be concerned with, as the book describes, often appearing a certain way, appearing generous, and that people see you in that way and not as a cheap person, but not necessarily being that. So it's better to appear a certain way than actually being that way. And so I really think it's something we all have to be very, very mindful of, because we are so aware of how people treat us and see us that we can get more consumed with that. And again, it does matter. A lot of, even if we look at human morality and how it evolved, it does appear that there's some aspects of being cooperative has benefits itself, but that also we are very aware of how others see us, because that does impact us if we're going to be ostracized and kicked out of the group, which would mean a death in the past, or if we're going to be seen as someone that you should not cooperate with or should not interact with, and so that limits your experiences or resources and relationships. So we could see that human morality does have some connection basis on how we are seen, that appearing moral is important. Whether or not you are moral might not be as important. And now bringing it back to working on ourselves. So first, let's be aware of it in ourselves. Of course, it's there in other people. And when we see it in other people, not to say that we completely overlook it if someone does something egregious and just tries to appear good when they're actually not good. But being aware that part of what also might anger us about that is that we do it ourselves. But so when we're trying to improve ourselves, work on ourselves, of course, it's very important to first know ourselves and be aware of what's going on. But when we're trying to quote unquote fix, and I say that because I think usually that's the wrong mindset with these things, fix these things about us, improve on ourselves, be very wary of the quick fixes. Be very wary of, okay, if you are being angry towards people or someone, here's a quick way to change that. It usually and almost always won't be something quick. And the quick fixes are usually this, something that makes it appear like you're not that thing. So if people think you're a mean person, use this word or these words and people will think you're nice. If your partner doesn't think you're listening to them, here are some, you know, facial expressions and techniques and certain words to say to make it appear like you're listening. And I think that's very problematic and it really bothers me to see that, because it's us not trying to actually genuinely become better or improve on those things, but to appear that way. You know, so you see things like five ways to be as a leader to make your employees think you, I don't know, care about them or that you're listening to them or show up in this way. And what that generally is saying is, don't actually become that. You don't have to become that thing that would be good, but here's how you'll look that way. Here's how you build good relationships. You know, just keep saying the person's name. That makes them feel listened to and cared for. So just say their name and people feel really good. And that tends to be the case. You know, your name has a lot of significance. It identifies you. It makes you feel special. You stand out. So when someone says your name, a lot it can feel good. It usually does feel better. Of course, like a lot of these things, it can backfire when it feels like it's too much. That's one thing. Or two, okay, you're just saying my name a lot because, you know, that's going to make me think you are, you know, caring about me or you're making me feel special. But we have to be very wary one, about our own Machiavellianism of being very aware of how other people see us and being good in their eyes more than becoming good people or what we actually think are good values. And two, when we try to work on those things that we know we need to work on, make sure that you're trying to actually genuinely improve, which is always going to take a long time. It's like saying you're out of shape, how to become in shape in 2 days. It just doesn't happen, or instantly. It's not going to change that quickly when it's something that you are having a hard time with or have had a hard time with for a long time. If you're someone with anxiety, it doesn't turn off automatically unless you take some kind of very strong drug, which is not good, and it's going to have its own consequences and doesn't mean the problem has gone away. It's just been numbed or masked completely, but that mask has to come off and now you have other issues to deal with on top of the anxiety that'll still be there. Or if you're an angry person and you feel like you get angry a lot, or if you are a judgmental person, or if you are whatever it is that you're trying to work on, know, first of all, that's okay. You're human. We all have flaws. But also know that if you want to work on it and genuinely work on it, one, I hope you'll genuinely work on it, meaning that you don't want to just appear that you're not that thing anymore, because that would make it clear that it's about making sure other people see you in another way rather than striving towards what you think is good. And secondly, be ready that whatever that is will take a long time. It must take some time and long time to do that. You know, I was thinking of gardening today, something that I don't really do myself, but I always think it's a wonderful thing, even not necessarily doing full-on gardening and having a garden, but just growing a plant. It's good for us as adults, but also for children, because I think it's so good to help them. First of all, you're doing something that's nurturing and loving and caring, but also something that takes a lot of patience. You do all this work, prepping work, and you already start watering and doing all the things you need to do. And then for days, maybe weeks, you don't see anything. And then maybe you'll see something sprout, something very small, and it can be so exciting because of all that time and effort and patience and waiting that went into it. I think that's such a wonderful thing to teach our children, to look at that. And you see this a lot in science classes. I've seen in the United States where they do that. You know, they plant a seed and they see it grow. And sometimes it's something that sprouts in a day or two, which I can understand sometimes as far as how the lessons go, it might be necessary. But I think if it takes even longer, even better. Show them the value of that patience and that waiting. And for something to genuinely grow, it's going to take a lot of time. And for us to grow and to make a change, it's always going to take time. So as always, you hear me talk about it a lot, be wary of quick fixes, because they're out there because we're hoping for that. So people are ready to sell that. They know they're going to get more attention if they tell you, hey, that thing that you want to work on that might take years, oh no, you can do it in 5 minutes. Here's the trick. Here's the hack that'll help you get over that. When it's not like that, it's not going to be that simple. So I hope you will heed that advice that we all have flaws. We should try to work on them for ourselves and that becoming better people, not just so we appear as better people. A very big challenge, because it's so automatic to see ourselves through that lens almost only, or at least first, but hopefully could focus more on ourselves and what we think is good and how to be a good person. All right, that brings us to the end of tonight's show. A big thank you to Farhuda here in the studio. You've been listening to In Session with Dr. Farhuda Lakhwi. Zan Zendegi Azadi.